Hey, nerds and dorks, welcome back. We're the Hype Benders. I'm Joshua.
I'm Dan.
I'm Pete.
I'm Sean.
And now let's continue with Avatar Book 2, Earth. This episode we'll be reviewing Episode 4, The Swamp, Episode 5, Avatar Day, and Episode 6, The Blind Bandit. So to start, the swamp is Aang hears the Earth as they're flying on Appa and heads down and finds out it's just Florida. And there we meet a Wish.com Boomy doing his best Obi-Wan to teach them that the Aang gang, to teach everyone in the Aang gang that everything is connected after they all think that they see their loved ones and dead fish ladies. Zuko then also returns as the blue spirit and goes hardcore Dick Turpin and steals everything. So on this one, I don't know, let's start with Dan. What was your thoughts on this episode?
That this was the precursor to the blue Avatar movie that we see later, with all the trees connected to the big tree in the middle.
Oh, yeah. I had not made that connection. Oh, my God, yeah. Holy crap. Avatar and Avatar together.
James Cameron.
Oh, wow.
Owns some people's money.
Ooh. I mean, lots of banjo music also was something that got conjured up.
I said Florida.
Yeah.
Florida. At first, I thought that guy was plant bending, and I was really excited because
he was.
That was kind of my theory, but it was really just the water.
Well, that's what plant bending would be, right? Like, I mean, that's
But that was cool that that's a new. We're starting to learn this thing because, like, pretty sure that we're going to meet Earth. And I mentioned this, I think, a while ago that Earthbenders should be able to bend metal, and we just haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Which was funny that I thought we'd see that when they were on the metal oil derrick.
Oh, yeah.
But or with Boomy in the box, but I guess metal bending is a big deal and not everyone can do it. But yeah, I like that, like, oh, yeah. And I think they mentioned that you could do any living thing that has water, which has some pretty scary repercussions if you think about bending the water.
I think you spoiled something in our first go.
Well, that was, that was something I had known even before starting this podcast.
It was the blood bending, right?
Well, I mean, we've seen lightning.
Okay,
bending,
sorry. Spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, I don't know that it's a spoiler. I mean, like, we're clearly seeing, like, sort of like an advanced class level of bending from everybody, right? So we've seen plant bending now from water. I think it's once again, it's like, you know, we've got our monster of the week with, like, some heavy friggin' implications that there's, like, another water tribe. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that was cool. I love how they didn't know that there were other water tribes. They were like, oh, we thought they were all just redneck water benders.
So this definitely starts to make more sense then with how it seemed in the first season things were very, like, regulated to which nation you are born into, that you get only the one element to bend. It seems a lot less like that now. It's just it's definitely more interesting this way,
predicated towards that thing. But you can even learn, like, some really weird shit with that. So, like, if you're water, you can do, like, plants and trees. If you're earth, you can it's coming like a freight train, you can definitely do metal. If you're fire, you can do lightning. I'm not really sure what air gets you.
Telekinesis.
Well, I mean, we've already kind of seen that.
Space.
Yeah.
Ooh, space bending.
Space bending. Yes. That's pretty awesome.
I mean, like, if we want to be super nerds, like, air is in your blood, so...
Yeah, but so is water. And iron.
Yeah. So I have a quick question that's not based on anything we've talked about so far. What would you call the animals? They were like the catfish, gator, crossover.
I love that thing.
They called them... They called them, like, cat reptiles or something. They had a word for them, and I knew it right up until he asked. But they mentioned them by name. They call them something like cat stalkers.
They're
or something.
Definitely fucking scary.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I wasn't quite certain they were waterbending because I just assumed they were earthbenders. And I was like, how are they moving the boats? And it's like, that's probably waterbending. So, like, I don't know. That was cool that it was like, yeah, no, it was waterbending. And that's
right. Because I was thinking, like, maybe it's mud and it's like the mud and the water they're moving. So it's like they're earthbenders. But, like, they definitely kept us questioning until, like, that very end where he's like, no, it's water.
We've seen three tribes of waterbenders now, and this is something that I would love to put out there in front of, like, the group and just get your opinion on. I mean, an earthbender lives in earth. A firebender doesn't really have the option to live in fire, but they could probably walk through it and easily take no damage from it.
Well,
right?
We've seen them in, like, volcanoes, though.
Yeah, but, like, they can clearly, like if two firebenders are fighting, it seems like there's less of a concern from burn damage, which you don't see as much. It seems to be more about the impact.
Unless you're Zuko.
Well, yeah, but Zuko's clearly fighting, like, way above his weight class, so he was probably hit in the face with something that was, like, you know, the temperature of the fucking sun, and that was what hit him. And he was just not expecting it to be that hot. But for the most part, it tends to be, like, when they're fighting, it's about the impact. You know, if they're fighting a non-firebender, yes, it's going to burn. But to each other, it doesn't seem to do that much damage because they seem to be able to shrug off the effects of firebending.
Or just dissipate the fire.
Yeah. But the thing that I think is fascinating, right, is that, like, unlike these other elements, right, you know, like, you can get into water, right? You can swim around in it. It's a thing you can live in. But none of the waterbenders seem to live in the water. We still haven't seen any of them swim. And, like, it makes sense for the northern and southern tribes because the water is freezing and would kill you. But, like, it seemed odd to me that these guys still used boats.
Well, it's still, like, if you're fishing, it's more practical. But, like, it would have also made sense to see them, like, jump in at one point.
Yeah.
Or just start, like...
There's also those
They're not wearing a lot of clothes.
Gators.
Like, there's... Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for what it's worth, those were very simple boats, too, because it seemed like they needed the bare minimum.
Yeah, they were very minimal, yeah.
Essentially just a baking pan that you could sort of steer around because you're a waterbender.
So wait, let me gear you guys a bit more towards, like, the greater point of this episode, because it was a very Star Wars force.
Yeah, okay,
it
thank you.
And binds us thing.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you guys thought of very that. Much the tree on, you know, Dagobah.
That's why we saw UA, we saw foreshadowing to everyone's favorite blind girl, and we saw, what was the other one? There's UA. Who did Katara see?
Her mom, I think.
Right, but that was pretty heavy, I felt. One thing the show is doing better now than it ever did in the first season is that it's balancing, I think, some of, like, the humor and, like, the sillier moments with the heavy moments.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, this is an episode where we have this, like, they're seeing their, like, past loved ones. They're learning this very heavy lesson. I love the guy in the plants when they finally learn who he is. And he just, like, they didn't beat him. He just relented because he's like, oh, we're actually on the same team. So he was a serious badass when you think about that.
Yeah.
And he teaches them how everything's bound and connected. Yeah, he was, like, the fucking badass, like, Yoda in a plant Chewbacca suit, which is great. But then there's, like, silly redneck waterbenders as well.
Did we get his name?
They did. I don't remember it, though.
They said it. I forget it. Yeah.
They, like, this one, Josh, couldn't agree with you more. Like, the comedy, even on the first three, like, it just hits better. It doesn't feel as, like, ha-ha, this is funny, right? It feels like genuine jokes. And on top of the Star Wars thing, though, I'd also say that I also very much got, like, Nausicaa, Valley of the Wind kind of feel with it, you know?
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, like, with the everything.
And Mononoke.
And a little bit Mononoke, but with Nausicaa, like, everything is connected, you know, like, it's self-repairing and all that kind of stuff. I really also liked, again, we see Zuko.
Oh, how psyched did you get when we saw the blue spirit? I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, when the cart passed. And then, yeah. When I saw that, I was like, oh, man, he's gonna be back on
his bullshit.
Yeah. I was like, but he doesn't have the backing, you know, like, his uncle doesn't want him to do it, so, like, oh, it's like, yeah. I saw it and
we'll
I got
get to that next episode.
I really thought the blue spirit was gonna be a one off, and I was glad it wasn't.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff. Okay, so that's what people were saying, is that, like, all this stuff in the first season pays off, and it does, you know?
Well, that's why I'm saying I wonder if it will change our opinion of season one.
I don't think it will, personally. Granted, you guys know how much I hated season one, but, like, I'll say, like, Clone Wars made me hate the Star Wars prequels a little less, but the sequels made me almost dislike the sequels more. Because it was like, and I'm not going down a rabbit hole Star Wars and everything wrong with the sequels, they're not perfect, but it's like they were way better than the prequels, at least as far as story writing, and it made me, like, so upset that, like, if the prequels were written better, we'd have 9 better written movies. And that's the same thing here, is this is almost making me more upset about a lot of the first season stuff. Yeah, it's paying off and pretty well now, but it's like, well, if it was written this well from the beginning, I'd be way more psyched, and I wouldn't have been in the hole I feel like I'm in now of, like, I'm digging out of.
I feel like anyone who's listening to this podcast has heard us tout Filoni and Clone Wars and our love for Star Wars. But, like, even the first season of fucking Clone Wars is rough. Like, that Clone Wars movie is garbage.
Oh, it is bad. Yeah, right. And similarly, like, it didn't know what it was doing. Like, they were, like, because they went from, like...
Yeah, I mean, because they set up stuff in the movie that pans out like season three. You know, like, if you ask me, though, is Clone Wars good? I'd say it's probably my favorite cartoons of all time, but I will also be quick to tell you, because I watched it as an adult, that the first season is utter trash.
If more people had said that about Avatar, and it wasn't until we started watching and I started being like, I thought this would be good, and it's not. That's when everyone came out of the woodwork to be like, well, the first season's rough, and it's
But that's my point, though, is that, like, everyone who's saying, like, this show is amazing are young. You know, they watched it at the right age. I watched Clone Wars as a grown man,
I think there's also the kind of looking back on it as a whole piece that kind of...
nostalgia glasses.
Well, not even nostalgia, but just looking at the whole thing as a piece, like, it has its weak spot. And I guess, like, if you don't mention it, that's just what some people do. They don't mention, like, oh, you know, get through the first season. Like, maybe it's not everyone will explain it to you that way, but as a piece, though, like, a three-season piece, they'd say, oh, this is great. I love it. You should watch it. Like, even with... seasoned people who are writing shows or books or any kind of media, like, I'm sure even being well practiced in this kind of stuff, if they start something new, they're gonna ease into it and it's gonna get better as it goes along. It's not something, you know, always you're gonna start out perfect. You're gonna be a little more timid in the front end of it because you probably have reservations of whether you think people are going to like your ideas or your story or your characters and, you know, what kind of world that you're putting out there.
Yeah, I mean, that just reminds me of something I mentioned the last episode of our podcast, that, like, I wonder how many people who, you know, haven't watched it super recently, or just even if they have, are now tinted by the positive memory of the show as a whole, that when they think of season one, they're like, yeah, sure, there's some Monster of the Week episodes, but that helps the plot and builds character. And, like, in my opinion, I'm like, no, they really didn't, but the later ones do, so you're probably almost transferring your positive opinions to the whole thing. So it's like, maybe if you watch it again, they might now, like, if someone like me says, like, watch it again and be a bit more critical, I'm like, oh, you're right, it wasn't as great, but it gets better. But some people have said flat out it's flawless, and I will never agree with those people.
But I mean, those people are just as guilty as of hyperbole as you know, sometimes we are.
Yeah, well, and definitely. Pete and I, you specifically, also have the additional detriment of the type of assholes we are, that the more someone says something is awesome and you have to watch it, the more we start getting, you know, against it and intimidated.
I hate it. Yeah.
And don't want to get into it. And then that gets even worse, that when we do push through that and say, fine, I will watch this thing you're all telling me to, even though I'm so nervous because you've hyped it up so much, and then it radically doesn't meet that hype, then it's like, you know, not only fuck the show, but fuck you.
Yeah.
And that's where I very much was in season one.
I'll throw myself under the bus. I did that with Nirvana. I fucking hated them when they came out because everyone who liked them was a piece of shit. And so I only got into Nirvana.
I know exactly who you're talking about too, because we were friends back then.
Yeah. I only got into Nirvana maybe 2 or 3 years ago. You know, like Cloverfield, you know, like you Jaffe boys talked that movie up so much, and I didn't see it until like 2 or 3 weeks after you had already seen it twice, and I was like, eh, it's okay.
Well, the trick was to fly from London to New York, and then immediately get off the plane, have your brother pick you up, take you into a theater in a basement in New York, watch that movie, come out of the basement, and not feel like you're in it with the jet lag and the whole experience. So I guess you just didn't watch it right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after I watched it, I did see it in Jersey City, and I did, like, drive by the skyline of, you know, like, New York City, and I was like, oh, I just saw that get demolished. But
yeah,
we're getting so
off the topic.
Did have one disappointing thing in this episode.
Ooh.
They kept mentioning possum chickens, and they didn't show us any damn possum chickens.
I thought they did. Right. I thought they did.
No.
I didn't see them.
I think they were eating something, but we didn't see, like, a live...
Well, I don't want to see dead
cat
ones.
Gators.
I want to see
the
live
things
ones.
Were the cat gators.
Yeah, we saw the
catfish.
No, there's at one point it passes over a possum chicken hanging from like a line.
Gatfish.
Oh, I need to go back and find that.
Yeah, there you see one.
Yeah, but you'd really think they'd highlight it or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, they kind of just like they don't like point it out, but like you definitely do see one because I remember thinking, oh, that must have been what that thing hanging from the clothesline was.
Here's my fear, though, guys. So I think I was very clear that my favorite stuff from season one.
The swamp knows your fears.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what it does. In season one, I loved all of the animals, right? Like, that was, like, my favorite thing about season one. So far, in season two, we've gotten new animals, like, every fucking episode.
Oh, yeah. They know it was popular.
And I'm like, yes, just fucking feed me, Seymour. Like, it's so good. I can't wait to see what else we get
that
coming.
Very up your alley.
Yeah.
Wait, so what's your fears? That
they're not going to, like, they're
going to
be like, oh, wait a second, we have to do plot. We can't just indulge Pete's need for animal combinations.
Weird animal
crossovers.
I
just found a picture of it. Yeah, this thing is in the swamp. It's hanging upside down. Yeah, it's definitely there. It just looks like a possum, though. There's nothing chicken about it. Maybe it's got wings.
Maybe it tastes like chicken.
Yeah, it's like it looks like a white opossum, and it's just hanging upside down by its tail in like one scene.
So let me ask one question that kind of leads into predictions, and then we'll move on to the next episode.
Okay.
So, I don't know, do you think we're going to see more of Yue and Sokka and their mom? Because we know what comes of Aang's vision, we'll get into that. But do you think that's just a weird swamp thing, or do you think we're going to learn more about, like, the afterlife and spirits connected, like spirits of dead people, and we're going to see more Yue and Mom and other people?
I definitely think we're going to see more of Mom. I think that at some point they're going to want to, as the romantic subplots with Aang and Katara develop, I think they're going to want to start developing one with Sokka, and so maybe they'll use that as like his... will they, won't they, is like they'll be all into him and he'll be like, but I still love the moon, you know.
Yeah.
So
what's her name could come back. Suki could come back.
Yeah. Right. She's definitely coming back. Jet is definitely going to come back.
She was mentioned, I think, in the next episode.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, I feel like with what Pete said with Yue, I feel like they need something, like a scene or something, Spirit World and Sokka to, like, have closure with that.
Yes.
And I think then he'll be able to, like, kind of move on. And because they're obviously still, like, putting it out there as a thing that's lingering that he's dealing with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You can't just throw another girl at him and have him be like, whatever.
Right.
Like, it needs to be a big deal if he loves again, like, kind of how he gets there.
There was a point to them putting her and Katara's mom there that they're, you know, we know the spirit world is a thing, and we know that most likely, I guess, dead people will be in the spirit world in some shape or fashion, and they might be able to connect to them or talk to them in that way.
True. Well, speaking of Suki, then the second episode that we watched, which was episode 5, Avatar Day, the Aang gang learns about Avatar Day in the city, where it turns out to be the exact opposite of what they thought it was. Sokka goes all out, Bender Bink, Cumberbatch, Sherlock, to get Aang out of jail, because they really don't like the Avatar. I also love that little side scene where the tattooed bald guy in jail was like, I like you, kid.
Yeah.
That was good.
Oh my god, that made me think of the meme with the three bulky guys on the computer talking to the one kid.
Oh, yeah.
King. Like, oh, you can do it.
Oh, yeah, my
work
kid.
Work out,
yeah,
and be strong. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, his Sherlock show didn't really end up really mattering at all, because the Avatar confessed to the crime, and we learn a lot about that city and I think about the Avatars. And then Iroh finally has enough of Zuko's bullshit and lets him go out on walkabout. That's where Zuko kind of said, I'm going on my own. And I think Iroh maybe figured that it's time for him to, maybe his tea and wisdom isn't cutting through, so he needs to just get slapped around on his own or something. We'll see how that goes.
I mean, as someone who was a piece of shit teenager, you know, like sometimes you need to
figure it out,
like,
on your own.
Yeah, well, you need to like have the world kick you in the teeth, you know.
That's fair.
So,
well, here's my first big question I want to ask about this episode, and I'm sure to lead us into everyone else's opinions, because I also, I thought this was a pretty cool one, but I think it gets a little overshadowed by the next episode, but we'll get to that. Here's my big question, though. In the whole, like, I love that Sokka did the Sherlock Holmes, he even got a pipe and a weird hat, but it wasn't exactly the Sherlock hat and pipe, which I thought was kind of a cool nod.
Yeah, but we all knew what it meant.
He and Katara found all these, like, clues with the wrong boot size, and the sun was in the wrong place, and all this stuff, so they were like, it could not have been Kiyoshi, I think is the name of the Avatar.
Yeah,
yeah.
And said, like, the Avatar couldn't have done this thing, and then they put all that stuff on Aang. James Hong yells at him, and then Aang like kind of says, like, here's why I couldn't have done it, but then he becomes the Avatar, who just says, yeah, I did it, it was me, and it was because your hero was an asshole. And what I didn't understand was, like, then what was the deal with the wrong shoe size and the wrong time of day and all the clues they figured out that were clearly wrong?
I have the answer for that.
Okay, good, because I was confused by that a lot.
And again, this might be my no-prizing it, but, like, she didn't technically kill him. She removed part of the peninsula to create an island. And when she did that, their leader was the one that was standing on the cliff face, and he fell. So that footprint was their leader. He had tiny feet,
yeah.
And then he fell off.
Yeah, because they went out of their way to tell us he's smaller.
Yeah, that's what that is. You know, like, so yes, she did, but she also did also start form her own temple that night, you know, later that day. So she's responsible for his death, but she didn't outright kill him.
Hmm, okay. It was just funny how, like, it was later that that was, like, a refrigerator thought I had, where I was like, wait a minute, they proved him innocent, and then the whole climax was him, or her specifically, just admitting to it, so.
Did anyone else notice that Kiyoshi shows up in the same inexplicable tornado that forced them to land
in
the swamp in the last episode? And, like, it's never, like, mentioned or lampshaded in any way, but it's just, yeah, okay, it's the same weird little dirt tornado.
At first, I was like, I thought that was an earthbender, but I realized, wait, she's the Avatar, she can do all of them. But yeah, that's one of the things cool about her having fans as a weapon. I love the way she used the fans to, like, cut the peninsula into an island, but also, like, then Aang used the fans as an air weapon, which would probably be an awesome use for an airbender, actually, to have those fans. But I thought that was like a cool, like, seeing two different avatars use the same weapon two different ways. I'm still loving all of the, like, earthbenders stomp on the ground a lot, and firebenders do lots of fast motion, and waterbenders do groovy
tai chi
kind of hippie arm movements, and it's just really fun the way
one of the things I think was in this episode that it was in the last episode where I noticed it, and by last episode I mean our last episode, when they're fighting with the general in the very first episode of season 2, is that all the earthbenders are shoeless.
Yeah.
Like, oh, good point.
You know, which is part of the reason why in the swamp episode I thought they were going to be earthbenders, is because those Hicks didn't have shoes.
Well.
So I was like, oh, okay. And then we see this. So I'm curious to see. It makes sense, you know, like with what Sean was saying earlier about everyone being connected. You know, like, if you're an earthbender, of course you want to be touching the ground at all times. Like, why? Like, it'd be stupid of you not to.
Which, again, becomes a bigger deal in the next episode. But
right.
So, wait, anyone let down by the lack of Suki in this episode? They mentioned her, but we didn't see her.
No, I like that because, again, now we're getting... They're finally doing foreshadowing. She left to fight in the war.
We're getting payoffs.
They said that she left to fight in the war. And I'm like, okay, that means we're gonna see her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's going to be more badass by the time we see her.
Or she's died off screen, in which case she's going to have like a whole thing going on. But people don't seem to die off screen much.
No. I actually didn't like...
How bad can Sokka's luck be?
I actually didn't like a lot of this episode. Like, I felt it was a little of a slog to get through. Like, I didn't particularly hate it, but I didn't particularly enjoy it. I like focused definitely on the end when Kiyoshi showed up, because that was awesome. But then I focused more on like Zuko and Iroh. Because I like Zuko back on his bullshit. I like Thief Zuko, Blue Spirit, dual swords, just stealing shit. Like, I don't know why, but like...
Rob from the rich and give to me.
I feel like he's in a decent... Yeah, he's in like a decent...
he's very like, gray Dick area Highwayman.
At this point. Yeah.
Adamant. The fact that like he's... That Iroh like knows it and is just kind of like, if I don't see it, then I don't... have to deal with it, you know.
Right. He's just throwing it out there.
Was it this episode or the last one where we got that little like clue where again he's not perfect either, where he was like, I don't like where you got this food, and he's like, well, I got it, and then he eats it and it's delicious, and he's like, okay, I guess I don't care so much because this is a tasty ass.
So speaking of that, the animal that they picked up, and again, I felt really like that was upsetting that like they were like, okay, these guys were super nice to us, and I'm just gonna flat out fucking steal from them.
Yeah, they healed Iroh, and let's just take.
And they took that bird thing, and I feel like this is a razor cut in generational culture, is whether you would identify that bird thing as a chocobo or a joust ostrich.
Oh. Yeah, but I fall on the chocobo side, even though I'm old enough to be the joust ostrich.
I'm definitely going joust ostrich.
Horse chocobo.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
Jaffa's ostrich, full split. So something is definitely going to come back with that girl, by the way, because I liked her character and how she was clearly getting to Zuko. And it's weird. Normally, I would dislike how fucking glacier slow they're pushing his story forward. But I think Dan's actually convinced me that I kind of dig that, like, the story with Zuko is just fucking... It's clearly going to take at least this whole season, if not into next season, where Zuko finally is like... I think it's going to just take him confronting his dad again, possibly even with the Avatar or without, but like he's going to need to get such rejection from his dad. But I think whatever it is, he's going to have to face his dad again to finally be like, this guy sucks. I've been spending my whole life trying to measure up to him and I need to listen to Iroh and stop being an asshole. But like, it's going to be such a slow burn. And the fact that we saw that girl look back and see him steal her like chocobo joust bird and like close the door, I'm like, we're seeing her again. We must see her again.
They got to connect more with their past and kind of like, because they barely got into that. They barely touched on like how they both have burn scars and like he was still closed off and he didn't, you know, obvious reasons he didn't want to tell her. But I feel like they need to have a moment again in the future where he tells her like the honest story or she finds out and then they could connect in that way. And I, you know what? At this point, I'm starting to think maybe Zuko only officially completes his retribution arc like the last episode of the third season.
Yeah, I mean, so here's my thing on this is within the show You know, like, so we know, spoilers for next episode, like, he's getting an earthbending teacher, right? So that means he's already got the earth, the waterbending scrolls, and Katara's teaching him that. Then he's going to get the earthbending teacher, and she's going to teach him that. I still predict that Zuko is going to be the one that has to teach Aang firebending. And it's not going to be out of a want to teach Aang, but it's going to be as a way to stop his sister and maybe his father.
Ooh, good prediction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so, I would bet money on that. That's just coming like a freight train.
I would actually add to that prediction a little bit, because I thought of this as you were saying it, is remember in the first season we met that one fire teacher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Firebending teacher. And then even he was like, I can't teach you because you're not ready yet. I wonder if what's going to happen is he's going to learn earthbending and then be like, now I can go back to that guy. I know exactly where to go to learn firebending.
Oh, yeah, that guy fucked off.
Yeah, either that guy is probably going to die. Very likely someone is going to kill him on purpose, like the sister or the dad, so that he specifically cannot teach Aang, which is what's going to force, like, I could see where maybe there'll be some rough truce between Aang and Zuko, where he's like, all right, I'm going to go learn firebending so I can defeat your dad. And then when they find out that guy's dead, that's where he'll be like, either Zuko will be like, fuck, I have to teach you, or Aang will be like, fuck, my fire teacher's dead. There's only one option. And the rest of the Aang gang's going to be like, no, that's not an option. He'd be like, no, we have to go to Zuko and have him teach me because there's literally no one else.
Right? Yeah, I mean, to add on to what Dan's point, though, is I would also agree with him that, like, Zuko isn't going to fully turn on his family until, you know, and be redeemed until very end. Like, end of season 3.
Well, and then, yeah, Sean, I want to hear your take on this because it does seem like Zuko's arc is glacial.
It means the payoff is going to be great.
I don't really. I think Pete's right. I think there might be an acceleration towards the end of this season. You know that
because of the sister.
Yeah, I think that he might wind up teaching. You know, I do think that going back to fire teacher guy and finding out that he's dead is an absolute inevitability, and then some sort of moment where either because it's the right thing to do or out of a desire for vengeance that slowly becomes a need for the right thing to do, Zuko's going to be the firebending teacher. My only question is like, will it be Zuko or will it be Zuko and Iroh together?
Oh, yeah.
Or another thought is perhaps,
if you want a good teacher,
either Iroh's Zuko and or Aang or both will be like, Iroh, can you teach me firebending? And Iroh will be like, no, I'm not going to do it. Zuko, you have to do it.
Oh, that sounds likely. I would love that.
Right. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I just had this thought while you guys were talking and I wasn't listening that...
that's unlike you.
So honest.
Yeah. But that, like, the one thing I is now I fully understand why people love this show, that I really do enjoy this show, is that it has taken away one of the problems I have with a lot of fantasy, both whether it be sci-fi or like traditional fantasy, in that, like, oh, I know it's a sequel, like a trilogy, so therefore they're not going to kill Frodo. You know, they're not going to kill Luke. Anytime there's death involved, it's not a worry. But this one, like, no one has tried to kill Aang. It's all about capture. So, like, and he's been caught, and the show hasn't been, while it has been hopeful, it hasn't been overly optimistic in that, like, oh, he's definitely going to succeed. I mean, we assume that he's not going to die because we know that there's a Korra, you know, the Avatar Korra afterwards, but
if we didn't know about that show, we wouldn't have that to go on.
Exactly. Like, when this show first came out, you definitely didn't have that. So I like that there is weight to everything. Like, you're not worried about him dying.
I just realized you ruined something, you asshole. Mm-hmm. I was just about to say that, like, to your point, the fact that they told us that, like, by the way, if you die this way, the Avatar ends, so you have to be very careful of that, would seem like scary foreshadowing of, like, now we know that can happen, maybe it will, but now we kind of know it doesn't because
well,
there's a
Korra,
yeah,
but so. I still think the important part of knowing that is still to, like, bookend, like, not to bookend, but to, like, rein in the Deus Ex Machina of the Avatar state, you know, instead of he can just get out of any incident because he can just turn his eyes white, you know, like, and become.
Well, it also actually makes sense because to the first episode of this season, it also kind of proves to us why, like, even if Aang can just go Avatar state whenever he wanted to and that guy's plan worked, it's still not a good plan because without knowing all of the forms, he is very vulnerable.
Yeah.
So, like, we can't just use him as a Deus Ex Machina, like you said, Pete.
There's still, like, a ticking clock with the next comet coming, and there's a lot of other elements that could create a failure without necessarily dying, just failing by not doing.
And that's another thing about this season that is also way better, is that now there's a sense of urgency and the characters are acting upon that sense of urgency, as opposed to the last season where, maybe just because I'm an adult and I know more how like stories work, I was imposing a sense of urgency only in that, like, you told me they have to go to the Northern Water Kingdom, so I assume they have to get there and quickly because there's a fucking war going on. But yeah, then they fuck around. And that was just kind of annoying. But now it's like, it's said explicitly, like, why they need to move quick and why they can't fuck around and why they can't take shortcuts with, like, yeah, just using Aang as a death machine because he does have vulnerabilities.
And I still stand by my my prediction from season one where, when Aang did fuck around with firebending and he hurt Katara.
And he's not going to want to do it again?
Yeah, that he's going to be reluctant. And then making Zuko his teacher, making him extra reluctant.
Oh, yeah. Because Zuko's going to have to teach him, like if you're going to do firebending, you need to just fucking, like, let it all out and go for it.
Yeah,
like,
you need
fires
to be
unreserved.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea that you mentioned earlier, that Iroh might tell Zuko he needs to teach Aang, because by teaching someone else, Zuko's going to learn the patience and to be reserved and all those other flaws that he currently has now. He's going to try to correct those.
Which that first fire teacher was teaching Aang not to do that.
Right.
Because I think their lesson, and I think Iroh's lesson as well, is like, because fire is so dangerous, you have to be really careful with it. And I'm sure we're going to, another prediction, I'm sure that we're going to get a clear, like, if not a soliloquy, at least clear advice from Iroh, probably in book 3 Fire, where he's like, this is the thing holding you back, Zuko. This is why you're not as powerful as you could be, is because of your anger. So, like, you're not controlling the fire is controlling you, like, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, oh, that's clever. I dig that.
And once he learns that, he can then teach it, and that will be probably a big deal with his arc.
I think so. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about this one before Josh leads us into the next?
I just want to say I agree with Sokka that this was the worst town ever.
Well, wait, one thing I was confused on that point is that they were, like, upset that they were eating sugar dough cookies. And I get that Sokka likes fried stuff and he specifically was excited about fried foods. But who doesn't like eating cookie dough? Like, that's the shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, after, like, having, like, just come out of having eaten what was essentially a giant house fly, I feel like sugar cookie dough is a considerable step up. And I would have definitely still given worst town ever to the fortune teller town.
Yeah, same.
Yep, yes.
But
yep.
Like, yeah, we've all risked salmonella eating raw ass cookie dough.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. We used to steal it from A&P.
Yeah, that was my go-to when I wouldn't get fat.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the next one, because this is definitely the big one. This is...
Yeah, this is what we've been waiting for.
A lot of us been waiting for.
A lot of people told us, and specifically me, that if we didn't like it by season one, or by episode one of season two, that this would be the big turning point. So, at WrestleMania, Aang finds his earthbending teacher in the most badass rich girl in the Earth Kingdom,
right?
Who defies her dad to join the gang. A lot happens, but then in the end, the dad hires Macho Man Randy Savage and the Nature Boy to get her back. Zuko is curiously absent from this episode, so I know... We've all probably seen the name of the next episode.
I haven't.
Ah.
I'm staring at it now, but yes.
We didn't see him at all this episode, so first, it's not even a prediction. I think we've read names in advance, so I'm excited for lots of Zuko next week. But we've talked a lot about Zuko in the last episode, so now I think we get to focus a lot on Aang and bending and learning and a lot of shit and...
Toph.
The first thing I'll say, we met Toph. She was awesome. I think this is one where I'm the first time I've been really jealous of people who watch this show for the first time, because, like, we knew about Toph. There's no way that you would not get this spoiled for you. Everyone talks about her. She's like a lot of people's favorite character, but it would have been a lot cooler. Like that big reveal when you see her.
Yeah.
I think unless I was very young, I would have known right away that, like, there's a little girl there. She's going to win, because why else would they have a little girl fighting, not, you know, Randy Savage? But, it would still have been like a really cool, like, oh shit, wait, what? And I think that was like a really big deal that, like, the way she showed up.
I'd also like to date your wrestling references, because so, like, you're doing the classic 80s wrestlers, you know, like Macho Man Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior, that, like, Hulk Hogan, that era. And then there's like Dan's wrestling era, which is probably
Stone Cold. The
Stone
Rock.
Cold, The Rock. And then now there's the new era of like John Cena. And that's the only one who I know.
But I still would have referenced Macho Man, because the boulder was
The boulder was very Macho Man. I pointed out to my wife, like, when he was pointing, his like head was tilted back a little bit, like that was even like Macho Man posturing, let alone the way
he was the rock.
Them.
He's supposed to be the Rock because he's the boulder.
Yeah.
The boulder. Yeah, the rock. That's the joke.
Talking about himself in the third person, that's a huge rock.
But this can become a big wrestling podcast where we talk about, I think, The Rock got his posturing from Ultimate Warrior and Macho
Maybe
Man,
a little
the
bit.
Prototypes.
I don't know anything about that. I know a lot of people that know about it more than I do. I will say this. The voice of the boulder, Mick Foley. Actual wrestler, yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome.
I did not know that. That's cool.
There were a lot of voices in this episode that I looked up.
I love that there was the Fire Nation guy who was basically kind of like Iron Sheik.
Yeah, he was totally Iron Sheik.
Yeah.
The evil country.
Right.
So yeah, like, because no one in Fire Nation talks like that, but the Fire Nation wrestler was all like, Fire Nation is best nation. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, that I definitely remember. Like,
I also love that because he exhibited no Fire Nation powers.
Yeah, I really wish he had like fake powers or something. Like he had like little like, explosives in his wrist or something, yeah, or like, and he just like put on this like, show.
Yeah, like you know those the Dazzlers, like the that they give out kids on the 4th of July.
Oh,
yeah.
You know,
none of us mentioned this, but in the last episode, that was one of the really cool fucking things. Actually, in the
Avatar Day,
was that one badass ninja dude with the explosions. Actually pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was cool.
I also love the line "Boomerang, you always come back." That was.
Those guys looked really cool. That line is great.
Did you find a meme watch in this, Sean?
My favorite meme watch!
I'm going to let Josh have it because this is the one he's been wanting.
Meme watch! I guess at this point I assumed it would happen later, but yeah, I was super excited about that one because like that is like the coolest GIF I think I've ever seen, and probably the only Avatar GIF I'd ever used before watching this show was the like, Earth Nation. Out.
I thought it was Water Tribe out.
It was Water Tribe.
Yeah, it was Water Tribe.
I'm so excited. I realized I didn't describe the meme.
I really thought you weren't even going to describe any of it. I was waiting.
I got my eyes on you and the Water Nation. That was fucking great. I love that.
I did notice a couple of cool things just in terms of like voices and stuff. On top of like Mick Foley being the boulder, which is that like there were a few voices that sounded really familiar. I haven't found anything to corroborate this. But is Toph Nemo?
Ooh.
Two what?
Nemo? Like N-E-M-O?
Yeah, like from Finding Nemo?
Yeah. Her voice sounds really familiar to me. Like, really familiar. And then I did recognize her dad, who at first I thought was like, you know, Cliff Jumper or something from like, you know, the old 80s cartoons.
Transformers?
Yeah, he was in an old 80s cartoon. He was not Cliff Jumper. He was Leonardo. Her dad is Leonardo.
Okay, Sean, I know what you were thinking. I just looked it up.
Yeah.
The voice actress for Toph is Miscellaneous Crew in Finding Nemo.
But was she a voice in it? Like, her voice just sounded like some little girl voice from some Disney something.
Yeah, I see it as Miscellaneous Crew in Finding Nemo. So you were right with Nemo. Just.
But, I mean, yeah, but she wasn't the voice of Alexander Nemo. Gould.
No.
But her dad is Leonardo, and of some interest to at least
TMNT nerds,
Pete and Josh and I, also Fandral Staghelm.
Oh wow!
Leader of the Night House.
I wouldn't have picked up on that, but I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense.
A weird thing with voices. I can't. I
usually do too. I can't watch anything without IMDb open these days. It's like it's a big thing for me.
Yeah. So as someone who was looking forward to. Toph, however you pronounce it.
Topher Grace, yep.
It's Toph, like she's tough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Topher Grace, yep.
I don't like that. So Toph is like 100%. I was so worried that not going to live up to the hype because it was the character from like that I said in episode 0 that I was looking forward to the most to meet. I was afraid initially that she was going to be kind of a dick to the Aang gang.
Which she was.
A little bit.
Not as much as I would have expected.
I was afraid it was going to be like episodes upon episodes of her being a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad that's not true.
And, you know, the fact that like she redeemed herself so quickly and she showed exactly how much of a badass she is. Like,
I loved when she put like three fingers out and it caused three giant rock spikes to hit her opponent. Like, it was such like a little motion she did. And it was like, I don't know. She was really cool looking. I mentioned in the last podcast, I love how this turns into like this was Bumi's little secret where he said, like, you need someone who can hear the earth. And it wasn't just like a, oh, because you're talking about an earthbender and you want someone who's like Zen. It's like, no, this is a blind girl who hears the earth. That's how she works.
Bumi knows what he's talking about in all things.
Yeah, Bumi fucking always listen to Bumi. I was surprised, and I was happily surprised, because I didn't know anything about her character other than she's a badass and she's blind and she's an earthbender. She's a little younger than I thought she was going to be, and I assumed she was either from the swamp and was like some like kind of loner, or that she's going to be like a street girl. I had no idea that she was going to be this weird like pampered princess who's like trying to break out of a gilded cage, which is very unexpected and really cool. I also, my big question on her that I want to pose to you guys, maybe Sean, since you like really digging into the nitty gritty of how things work, is I love how they showed how she like senses the vibrations and she knows where everything is and she can sense where the ants were and the visuals of like the radiating kind of sound and vibrations that she's picking up on.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how that's going to pan out, because it seems like her big weakness is that if someone's not on the ground, she can't probably sense them, because I'm sure she could sense in the air a little bit, but we did see that little throwaway gag of Sokka throwing the belt at her and it just smacks her in the fucking face because she didn't quite hear it because it wasn't on the ground.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how that's going to play out in the future. She's either going to learn maybe from Aang how to get better at like sensing the air, or are they going to just kind of ignore that, or how are they going to deal with the fact that like it seems like she has a very big weakness for being a giant badass?
I don't know. I was thinking about this because at the very end of the episode when they're riding away on Appa, she looks so fucking stoked to be in the air, getting away from her family, and like finally getting to be herself. But like I had that same question in my head. I was like, I wonder how she feels now, because like Appa's not the ground. He's not the earth. So she's literally disconnected from everything she knows.
And she's not seeing that great view. She's just feeling the wind and is just loving the freedom. But I was thinking when she was fighting Aang, it was... They kind of showed that she could still kind of sense where he was, but there's a couple of times where I assumed that, like, also I assumed that, that she wouldn't know where he was and that he would pick up on that, that he would be like, wait a minute, if I use the air to jump me up and then I kind of float down and never touch the ground, which he's very good at not doing, he would be her big weak spot, which he kind of is, but I feel like that can just come up again, that someone might notice that, like Zuko might notice, like, oh, if I just stay airborne, I can fuck this girl up.
Well, I think with Aang, though, he wasn't trying to beat her.
Also, Zuko can't stay airborne. That's the thing. Is everybody that could potentially stay airborne for any length of time is either in a wheelchair or dead.
Yeah, but I mean, he can ride his little air ball, which if it goes up, I assume she...
Yeah, but like anybody that would really try to kill her, like Zuko, I could certainly see like taking to the rooftops and stuff, but that's still connected to the earth, so she's still going to pick up on it. She might have a bit more of a delay.
Someone who can actually fly in a glide or anything, it just seems like a weak spot. Or if you jump, like dudes like Zuko can jump way farther than a normal person. So if you, I'm getting very super technical here, but if you tried to do it in a way where she doesn't know how far and in what direction you've jumped to, you could kind of fake her out. It just seemed like a bit of a weak spot. I'm just going to, they're going to,
I mean, she wouldn't, well, either way, sense the fire either.
She definitely does have a weak spot there. I'm not going
to
argue.
Again, we saw it because we saw her take the fucking belt to the face. Because Sokka just kind of, here's your belt, tossed it to her, and she went, ow.
Well, that's what makes her interesting, because she is powerful, but she has this thing that people can exploit. And I guess like whether they pick up on it or not, you know, depends on how effective she is.
In a non-magical world, it wouldn't matter so much. But because we know at least Aang can fly and other people can simulate flight, it is a bit more of an issue, I suppose.
But she also has this like nearly preternatural ability to anticipate. So like
she's like Daredevil.
Once things are in the air, as long as she can like sort of pick up a launch vector. So there was one part where like she like ducks her head back and like a couple of three of the like little rock shards go right past her face.
Yeah, they did bullet time.
Right?
Yeah.
She didn't know where the rock shards were. She knew where they came from and knew how to get out of the way of them. And that goes back to what my man Bumi said about like the three Jings and like knowing when to act, when to when to do nothing.
Good call. Yeah, right.
She's got a strong ability to anticipate, which I think is what she can use to compensate for that weakness, is that she can anticipate.
And that's something that I definitely noticed in that final fight when she took on all of the wrestlers. At first I was thinking, like, this fight scene seems slower than some of the other fight scenes they've had. They've had other great fight scenes. But then I realized it's, I think they were trying to convey that she was pausing and like waiting for them to come to her before she did like this one swift, like jujitsu, use your own force against you kind of maneuver. And then that was what they were
telling
us. Well,
and hearing the earth, I think the hearing the earth is kind of a double entendre as well, which is how Bumi clearly, you know, talks, where it's like she's physically actually hearing the earth. But I think there's also that sense of like she is centering herself and pausing and like becoming one with her environment, which involves the like slowing down
as a fighting
earth
style.
Slow, right.
Yeah. That's the whole point, right? Like, water as a fighting style is very fluid. It's very like you staying out of the way and you're using your enemy's energy against them. Fire as a fighting style is all offense. Air as a fighting style is all about like sort of remaining in motion. But her thing is about like, I know they're going to be here. And with one strong hit, I end it. Like, I'm not going to like do a lot of dancing around. I'm just going to finish this.
She threw all of her opponents to the same exact spot.
Yeah,
for that
a huge amount of impact.
I actually have a theory, too. I don't know if they were particularly conveying this in this episode, but maybe it'll come up later. So all the sand that was kicked up around in the stadium, I wonder if somehow if all that sand being kicked around could create like a predator type image on people, and she could feel people through.
Oh,
the
totally.
Fact
that
there's
definitely
sand. That's 100%. Yeah, because she just missed that dust with like the back of her hand.
Right.
And she only did that once she had won, because the dust is a huge advantage to her.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
she's just seeing like the shadows of where everybody is by where the dust isn't. I mean, yeah, that's
well,
that's
yeah,
because really
even
cool
it's
move.
Earth. So if she could still sense that through her feet and then upwards through the individual grains of the sand, that would make up
so
for people jumping in the air or being airborne.
So a character thing I wanted to point out, though, is I think at least to me kind of a big deal. It's funny. Is I would also argue that I just think the characters have been much better written. Their dialogue, their arcs have just been way just less annoying than in season one. Although Aang did one thing that reminded me of the kind of annoying shit he was doing in the first season, was when he like, they're in the middle of this like WrestleMania. They're like, who will come and fight her for this bag of gold? And he's like, I will. And I'm like, okay, he's probably going to like try to like beat her real quick, or at least prove that he's the Avatar, so she'll teach him. But he walks up, and as soon as he starts fighting, he's like, no, I want to talk. And I'm like, Aang, this is clearly not the fucking time. Like, there's an audience. You just took a challenge to fight someone for money. She clearly is into the fighting, because she just beat a bunch of dudes happily. And he's like, I just want to talk. But where it worked out is at the end, I liked how when she was like, no, my dad says it's fine. And they're all like, oh, okay. I almost expected Sokka to say something like, really? Kind of doubt it. But I like that that worked, unlike the fact that at least Aang and Katara are stupidly trusting. And I think I predicted in the like kind of the first season that like that would work against them at one point. It kind of did here in a very subtle way, that they both were like, oh, that's so cool. Your dad's fine with everything. And it's like, no, he's not. And that's clearly going to come and bite him in the ass, because now there's two more people after him who aren't even involved in the Fire Nation shit because they believed her story.
You can't trust the Avatar. He kidnaps children and babies and destroys your town.
Yeah. Avatar Day. Josh, you have one thing massively wrong. I don't want the internet to correct you when I have the ability to do so immediately. It is not WrestleMania.
Oh,
Royal Rumble.
Oh, thank you.
King of the Cage.
Yeah, would not have known.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right.
I wrote that 5 minutes ago, so that's fine.
A bunch of my friends would yell at me, too. They'd be like, you got to tell your brother that it's Royal Rumble because, you know, that's what it was on. And in 1995, this guy was staying for this guy, and you can't, and you're going to have to tell him. And I'm like, I don't want to.
And this is where I'm supposed to not say I don't care, but, you know.
I just wanted to prove you. I like to say that you're wrong. Like, that's
I very much
the
appreciate
whole basis
this,
of
Pete.
Our friendship.
I understand that, but it's still probably funnier when I care.
No.
Just saying.
I like it better when you don't.
Oh, really? That's interesting. That's, I thought you'd like it when I'm annoyed. Sean prefers when I'm annoyed, so I thought you'd be on that camp.
Yeah, no, I like it when you don't care.
All right. So, I mean, I think that's solid. Like, we're definitely in it now. Like, this is definitely better than it's been, and we're experiencing a show that we're excited to keep watching.
Any predictions?
I'll start, because it's a cheating prediction, is that clearly, well, I know next episode we're going to get a lot of Zuko, and I'm excited about that, because I think we've been overdue for a Zuko-focused episode. And I love that I don't have a prediction how it's going to go. I mean, he'll clearly learn something important, but like if it ends with him going right back to Iroh and being like, I kind of get it now, or it ends with him just starting his real journey of self-discovery and doesn't connect with Iwo for a couple of episodes. No fucking clue, but I'm excited to see more Zuko.
Well, prediction though. I want to hear your prediction.
Okay, I guess my prediction was a cheating prediction that I know the next episode will be about him.
Yeah.
Well, then my prediction, like I said, he's going to learn something. It's gonna start him on a path for sure, is that he's going to like learn something. But I don't know, it's hard to predict with him, and that's part of what I think I like about Zuko is like, I don't know if it's going to end with him being like, oh, I get it now, which I kind of doubt, or if it's going to end with him being like, okay, I must begrudgingly admit that this one thing Iroh said makes a little more sense now, so maybe I should start to consider some of the other things Iroh has also said, but I'm still going to be a dick.
Pick one. I want to pick one?
Yeah. I'm going to stick with the fact that I think it's going to keep going slow. I think he's going to get a small lesson that will become like a kernel that will become the cornerstone of many lessons he learns further on.
So you think like end of season two, he goes back to Iroh or no?
I'm sure he'll connect with Iroh by the end of this season. I don't think he'll stay away that long. And I guess here's a prediction with no basis is I wonder if, I think there's a possibility that even next episode, that if it's about Zuko, that we'll also find out that Iroh led him to believe that he's letting him go on his own, but he actually is going to kind of follow him and keep an eye on him to half protect him and to half maybe direct the lesson from afar. We'll see how that works out.
I'd co-sign that. My prediction then, since everyone else is quiet, the White Lotus thing that I predicted last season when Uncle Iroh, like they made Zuko stop to get the one Lotus piece from that game.
Oh, right. His secret move.
Oh, right. The White Lotus.
I think that is going to come up now that Zuko and Iroh have split, at least for the time being, is that we're going to start to see that subversive element within the Fire Nation or within all of the nations that are like secretly rebelling, not openly rebelling. I think that's finally going to start to take place in season two. That's my prediction.
Sean, you're up.
Yeah, all right.
We're going to end on Dan today.
I have a theory that I've been concocting. So since we did, I don't know if, you know, if you're listening to this, my brother and I did a role-playing game that dealt with, like, elemental powers. So I spent a lot of time researching it. Fire and water are opposites, but earth and air are opposites. So my theory is that Aang's going to be real bad at earthbending. It's at least at first. He's going to have a lot of trouble with it.
I was going to ask how everyone thought. I forgot what that was, how everyone thinks the lessons are going to go. Because she doesn't seem like the most patient teacher.
She doesn't seem patient.
She might be annoyed that he's not good at it right away.
He's trained in everything the opposite of what she's going to want him to do. He's all like jump around, flit around, like do a lot of dancing and like kind of stay unfocused. And she's going to be like, you do this one thing, you do it really hard, and you do it once, and that's the end of it. And that's just not how he operates. So I think he's going to have a lot of trouble.
And she doesn't have a lot of patience, which could actually make for very funny and
well, I
cool
think that's
lessons,
part she's
gonna
of the
be
reason.
Like, why are you not getting this?
So it took us until the very end of the last season to get a waterbending teacher, and even then we got him for two episodes before my prediction of like it was Katara all along, the magic was in you the whole time kind of thing came up. And since then we haven't really seen a lot of waterbending training.
We did see one. They were waterbending that one time. Yeah. And did the octopus thing, so they did allude to
but
it.
But what I'm saying is that like we've gotten an earthbending teacher much much faster, so yeah. I think he's going to hit a lot more obstacles.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I agree. The lessons are going to be harder.
Yeah, along the way.
Okay,
Dan, it's a lot for you to chew on and comment on, but I also want to hear your big prediction.
I feel like I agree with Sean. It's going to be a bit of a tough time teaching Aang earthbending. Probably take us a good majority of the rest of the season to do that. I'm looking forward to the Zuko on his own. What's going to happen there? I feel like he's going to find out that he needs help from other people, and he's going to fail at certain things. And
good prediction.
Kind of have a better reflection on who he is and become more humble as far as you know, his uncle or just the people around him. And I want to say from here, They made their goal. They found a teacher. I guess the only thing to do is to go to Ba Sin Se.
Right.
Oh, that has to happen.
Otherwise, I don't know where they're really going to meander to.
I wonder if that's going to be part of the training. I wonder if we're going to either find out that Toph has been sneaking away to Ba Sin Se to train with someone else because her trainer seemed very surprised at how good she was. Or if there's just some MacGuffin in Ba Sin Se where she's going to be like, we have to go there for your training.
There's a
because of
earthbending slab.
I'm just curious about the
scrolls
whole, like,
are there.
Yeah, I think we've heard it. I don't know if it's just spoilers anymore, but there's no war in Ba Sin Se.
Yeah, no, that's definitely going to come up.
Yeah, that's going to come up.
Yeah.
We clearly have to go there and see, you know, that there is war or whatever.
Again, like, I can see where this is going to be a lot slower as, like, you know, the training. They can't, you know, like, where I got annoyed at them not going right to the Water Kingdom is that, like, they could have sped there. I mean, even if it took a long time to get there, which would account for a couple of episodes, they took some seriously long detours that seemed like time-wasting. So, like, you could argue, like, no, they could just travel as fast as possible to the Northern Water Tribe, and a lot of season one was unnecessary. But, like, training happens as fast as it happens. Like, you can't learn something any faster than you just are. And to Sean's point, I think Aang's going to have a hard time with it. So we have a reason for this season lasting the next, what, 20 episodes? Like, there's a lot of episodes. And I wonder, maybe they'll go to Ba Sing Se because Toph will be training Aang and it won't be going very well. So she'll be like, damn it, this isn't working. We need to go to Ba Sing Se so I can get some scrolls or something, because you're just not getting it. But, like, there's a bunch of reasons they can have this kind of take longer. And, of course, now they're dodging the wrestlers that are after them. They're dodging...
Right.
Zuko's Azula. Still going to try to get him.
You know
and his sister and her
You know
friends.
Who else is coming after him still, I think? The pirates.
The pirates, yep.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
the pirates.
So exciting stuff coming up down the pike.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, so already like season two.
Okay, I have another prediction, which I really just hope happens. It's less a prediction and more of a hope.
I love these.
I really hope the pirates return a couple more times by the whole end of everything and we're done with everything Avatar. And I hope they end up becoming the good guys in the last...
Ooh,
like,
good guy pirates.
End.
Yeah. I'm into that.
Yeah. I'd love it as if the pirates in like at least one episode also serve the purpose of teaching them specifically that like they can't always trust their bending and helping them find like the vulnerabilities in bending.
Oh,
and, of course, Sokka would love that because Sokka would be like, see?
Maybe they teach Sokka.
Maybe they do.
Yeah.
Maybe Sokka has his own episode where he's a pirate for a day.
Oh, I like that plan.
But I like them as being like they're like the weird, like kind of piece point, the gray area of like sometimes the bending isn't even the best way to go. And these guys clearly live without it. And they're clearly fighting benders everywhere they go. So they got to be badass.
Actually, that brings me to something that I'm sorry, like we're at the end of the episode, but we just completely glossed over this important thing. I forget her name, but the circus gymnastic girl, mm-hmm. She can disable people bending because she hits the pressure points.
Oh,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That's right.
That's significant.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a big deal. All right, well, we'll get into it next episode.
And that's probably not a bending power. That's probably just sort of a dimak or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if Sokka is bending that.
Chakras.
Something like
that. Yeah, I mean, the upside, Josh, is that now we're in our 40s, so we don't have to worry about the death touch and yawning anymore.
Well, it also just makes me feel comforted that I'm 3,000 miles away from you.
Yeah. that's really more of it.
Yeah, just as a brief aside for those listening, Dim Mak is from it's an actual thing, but we all watched the same Batman the Animated Series episode after school, like, the same day, and the next day, about 10 of us all tried to use the death touch on each other, which started as just jabbing your fingers into someone's solar plexus, and then went to knuckles and to fists, and...
Yeah, it was painful.
It got really painful, really fast.
Or you watch Kill Bill and you do the same thing.
Oh yeah, the five touch.
Five touch. Yeah. Not good for your
good times.
Sternum.
Yeah.
90s high school where you could just beat the shit out of your friends in the hallway and go straight to class. I'm sure that still happens.
Oh yeah.
Did you guys watch a lot of kung fu movies, martial art movies when you're younger? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that was like, I wonder if that was like a us generation thing or if that was something that still happens today.
No, because the Wu-Tang made that shit super popular.
Yeah, so. Wu-Tang made that shit super popular, but also, like, Dan, I don't know if you're old enough for this, but I know Sean and Josh are, is for on WPIX on Sundays, like, day.
It was always Sunday.
There'd be a kung fu movie in the morning, and then, like, a monster movie or a horror movie at night.
Chiller.
Yeah.
Chiller Theater.
Oh, wow. All right, we're super old, and everyone's
we're gonna go
looking
die
forward
now.
To moving on.
We'll
to
see the... you next time, kids. Thanks for
this
joining us.
Signing out.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Bye.
Yeah, peace.
Bye.